I was very encouraged with this meeting. But this is a process. It takes a little time. You don't put it together in 45 minutes.
Virtually everybody I spoke to expects that he will ultimately endorse Donald Trump. But this may take a while. He cannot afford to be at war with his party's own presidential nominee. He made clear at the meeting that Trump must represent all Republicans, including the many that voted against him. And he also made it clear that this endorsement may come, but it will not come anytime soon.
In South Dakota on June 7th, we're going to be winning a lot more.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is Friday. It's May 13th, 2016, and it's 5:08. Welcome to another business day. Welcome to another edition of The Opening Bell for our Friday. Thank goodness it's Friday, TGIF. Big weekend in store? I don't know. Maybe. Looks like the weather is going to be a little iffy, but today's certainly going to be nice. Maybe lunch outdoors or something like that, but it's certainly going to be a little bit more chilly for the weekend. Lots to talk about this morning. More lines, as you heard Vic Vaughn talk about in the news, at Midway Airport. The TSA is under fire. These long lines at security waits. Yesterday, the director under fire by Congress. We're going to talk later in the broadcast with the Cranky Flyer, the blogger who covers airline industry news, about all of this and let you hear some of what happened to the director of the TSA yesterday. Also, some free portfolio advice. Paul Nolte is here on The Opening Bell. Coming up at first, your overnight global intel from around the world and from the WGN market desk. Asian shares generally lower today, off almost 1.5%. The Nikkei leading the charge there, off 234 points. All of the other indices in Asia lower. In Europe, the same story this morning. The DAX in Germany is off about 0.5%. So is the FTSE. In America, the Dow futures pointing toward a lower open on Wall Street later this morning. The Dow futures off 80. NASDAQ and S&P futures are off as well. Yesterday, the Dow traded in a 178-point range, but ended the day flat along with the S&P. The Dow traded most of the day generally right around the flat point of just a little above or below, kept going back and forth. Apple dragged the NASDAQ lower. The biggest decliner on the S&P 500 was Kohl's, the department store. Quarterly profit there plummeted. And the department store chain surprised Wall Street with a drop in sales at existing stores as well. What's happening to retail? Brinker Capital analyst Thomas Wilson.
I think it would be incorrect for investors to extrapolate that these companies that had poor results is a signal that the consumer is weak. Because we don't see it that way. There's lots of data that would suggest that the consumer is strong.
Still, another down day for Kohl's. 87% quarterly profit plummeting. The department store chain says it is in trouble. Analysts say it is in trouble as well. Reuters reporter Jerome Martis covers Kohl's and the retail sector.
Department stores are out of favor because the housing market has done so well. And because of that, the department stores used to benefit from strong home goods. Today, Kohl's reported that home goods were very, very negative. And this is a very worrisome sign, suggesting that this might be the beginning of the end for them.
There was a surprise announcement yesterday from Walmart stores. They're trading higher pre-market today. They say they're going to start testing a two-day shipping subscription service and building a regional delivery network. It is an obvious attempt to go head-on with Amazon Prime. As part of the project, Walmart, the world's largest retailer, will shift more of its inventory to 8 massive e-commerce warehouses around the U.S., the last of which will be built by this year's end. It's all part of a $2 billion investment the company's making in technology and logistics to boost e-commerce sales. So what is happening with the markets? So what's happening with your portfolio today? Let's bring in Paul Nolte, a chartered financial analyst at Kingsview Asset Management. He's our regular portfolio manager and has all of the insight that we are looking for today. Paul, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Steve. Nice to be with you again.
Are you in a good mood today, or are you sort of in a tepid mood? Is a tepid mood a good way to describe it?
I think that would be a very good way to describe it, and I can give you a little TSA insight as well, having flown around this week as well. So, but as far as the markets go, we're still suffering from a market that's struggling here, trying to figure out whether the Fed's going to be raising rates, not raising rates, or energy prices rising or falling, and how strong is the global economy. And that's been a discussion that you and I have had really since day one, and I don't think anybody's quite figured it out yet. And part of the reason why the markets have been dramatically sideways really for the last 2 years now.
The employment report this week wasn't so hot. There were some other economic reports that were indicative of an economy that might be weakening. Is that what you're seeing as well?
Yeah, it is. Certainly the retail sales numbers from a lot of the companies, Macy's, Kohl's, Nordstrom's, all point to, and I would disagree with the comment and the fact that the consumer, I think, is not really spending that much. They're doing okay, but there's also what I would call the Amazon effect. A lot of that spending has shifted away from a lot of the retailers toward Amazon, and you look at the stock price of Amazon versus everything else, and Amazon is doing extremely well here in the marketplace. So, again, when we look at the economy, the analogy I would use is a bicycle. We're riding a bicycle, and we're going very, very slowly, and it's very wobbly. And that really hasn't changed.
Before we hit traffic here, what was your TSA experience?
Probably about a half hour to 45-minute line waits at Midway and then down in Dallas. So it was we moved along, but it took a good 45 minutes to get through the line.
Yeah, and later in the broadcast, as I mentioned, we're going to hear from the TSA director and Cranky Flyer, the blogger who writes about all of this. It is even worse at many other airports. And the TSA director yesterday got a real invasive screening before the public in Congress. And there are not good things in his future, I don't think. But we'll discuss.
It'll be a long summer from the airports.
Hey, it's your money. You just graduated from college with a job in your chosen field, but your friends are making more. Paul McDonald with Employment Experts Robert Half says, don't sweat it.
Resist the urge to compare yourself to your peer group. Your focus on your first job out of school should be building the skills and the resume necessary to propel you forward.
McDonald also reminds us people tend to inflate things like their own salaries. Daria Albinger, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 520. Welcome back to The Opening Bell. Later today, JCPenney earnings come out. Also, we'll see retail sales reported later on this morning as well. The April report expected to show a little bit of gain. We're talking with Paul Nolte this morning of Kingsview Asset Management. Paul, the retail sector getting hit hard. I saw one analyst yesterday say that this might be the beginning of the end for brick-and-mortar stores, but then Sears announces that it's going to start maybe opening little express stores. So is there a little hope here?
Oh, there may be a little bit of hope, but again, I think we've seen a shift really over the last 3-4 years for a lot of consumers. As I mentioned before, to going online. And part of the reason why you're seeing Walmart respond to that by opening up all those distribution centers that you alluded to earlier. So you have a big shift, I think, in how the consumer is spending their money and how they're going through a retail experience. You may want to go to the store for clothes to try them on, but if you're just buying a tchotchke or something like that, you can do that online very easily. You don't need to necessarily try it on. You can take a look at it and buy it.
Is retail stock something that you would include in portfolios, or do you try to avoid that?
We generally have avoided a lot of the retail. Again, our view on the markets as a whole, we've skewed portfolios a little bit away from the consumer because, again, the consumer really, in our view, has not been spending. They've been in the rebuilding of their balance sheet mode, reducing the amount of debt that they have. So we've taken portfolios away from that a little bit. We still like the consumer stocks, but it's more in the staples area, things that you're going to have to buy every day, every week, no matter what happens to the economy.
We mentioned before we checked chat traffic before we went to the break, the Fed. Couple of indications this week of maybe this, maybe that. I've heard the next interest rate maybe won't happen until the fall. Others say it may not come until December, yet others say it may not come at all. What are you hearing, and how does that play into our portfolios?
Well, I think the Fed is going to sit on the markets, and they're not going to raise rates. They very well may raise rates only because they've been saying that they will. There's really not a good economic reason for them to raise rates. So maybe one, and it may be at the end of the year after the elections. But I think our general view is that the Fed will not raise rates at all this year. And as it goes into the portfolio, because of that, we've been, as we've talked about for a while now, bonds are fine. Interest rates have come down actually since the last Fed hike, and bond investors have enjoyed a 3-4% rate of return so far this year, which is certainly well ahead of the markets, the S&P 500 being, you know, on the flat side so far this year. So I think you'll continue to see that. So being safe makes a lot of sense in this environment.
And from the very beginning of our conversations, you've told everybody, stay in the bonds, keep it safe, keep it steady. That seems to be paying off, at least here as we get into mid-year. Tech stocks, they seem to be taking a little bit of a hit. I can't turn one of the business channels on without everybody predicting the end of Apple, and Apple's in trouble. And what do you make of the tech stocks?
Tech stocks are, you know, that's a very broad category. You have everything in there from Apple to Hewlett-Packard to IBM. And when you look at some of the bigger names, Apple certainly being the highlight, we kind of view Apple as a consumer staple. You're going to have your iPhones. You're going to turn them over occasionally. You're not going to be upgrading as much as we used to, because the newer technology or the advances in technology aren't as big as they initially were when the iPhones were initially introduced. So it's a huge cash generator, maybe not a lot in the way of new revenue or significantly higher earnings. There's a lot of room for the company to increase their dividends. But the technology sector as a whole, we still do like, because there is a very good growth component to technology as new technologies come on, introduced, replace other technologies in the marketplace. So in general, that's one of the faster growing areas of the economy, and in general like it. So we'd like to have a broad exposure to that sector.
Another safe sector that you like is always the emerging economies. Brazil is one of those. They've not really had some good news this past week, past couple of days. But overall, is that sector still performing well as too?
It's still doing okay. It has generally been moving kind of opposite of the S&P 500. So on a good S&P day, emerging markets may not be keeping up. The key to emerging market is going to be the commodities. And we've seen energy prices come down here a little bit. We've seen steel, copper, all come down, and that's had some impact on the short run for a lot of emerging markets. So again, the key really for investors to keep an eye on, and we watch it very closely, is energy prices and commodity prices in general. And they've softened up here a little bit, and emerging markets have done so as well.
So as we head into the weekend, what do you like?
You know, still bonds are number one on our list. Has not changed really for the last year or so. Still on the consumer side, as far as the staples and that part of the economy, do still like technology. So the themes that we've really been talking about all year have not changed, and not really likely to change. But the slow and steady is really the way to take a look at this market and invest in this market, so as not to lose a lot of sleep.
Paul Nolte, Kingsview Asset Management, chartered financial analyst there. You can get his regular newsletters, his Nolte Notes. All you have to do is go to kingsview.com and go to kingsview.com/WGN. Sign up for those newsletters, get some free advice from Paul, and he'll help you survive whatever economic financial turmoil your portfolio might be in. Paul, thanks as always for being with us on the Opening Bell. Have a great weekend.
Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you soon.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. Yesterday, before Congress, the director of the TSA made an appearance. Lots of tough questions for him about the long lines at airports across the country. It's not even the summer travel season yet. Lines out the door in many locations. The TSA having obviously big problems in getting people through security for one reason or another. The questions came hard and heavy, including from the congressional panel's chairman, Congressman John Mica.
TSA cannot staff to traffic. I've seen it all over. I had an anecdotal report last week of a member that told me that at one airport, they were backed up lines forever. The other side of the airport, there was a concourse, and there were everybody standing around, and someone can't shift them. And in the lane that the individual was leaving, and two were closed. People can't make a decision to staff to traffic.
The TSA director, Peter Neffinger, tried to respond.
The more people I get into trusted travel programs, the more I can move them through expedited, and the more we can focus on those who aren't. We discontinued the practice of arbitrarily assigning and randomly assigning people from an unknown population into that expedited population. That was called managed inclusion. That pushed a lot of people back into the standard screening lanes. We have a significantly larger population of travelers this year than we had previously and has grown substantially.
Some members of Congress took their anger out on airlines, telling the airlines they should scrap baggage fees and let people check their luggage for free, at least for the summer. Let's bring in Brett Snyder. He's the writer of CrankyFlyer.com, the blog on airline industry news, and he is with us this morning via Skype from California. Brett, what's going on with the airline industry? What can be done to solve this?
Well, everyone is playing the blame game right now. And no one wants to take responsibility, which is incredibly frustrating for travelers because it's clearly not the traveler's fault. So, you have Congress pointing to TSA that they should do a better job and then pointing to the airlines and saying that they should change their business models because of their inability to actually properly fund the system. And the airlines push back on TSA and again on Congress for not providing the right amount of funding and not staffing everything properly. And it's a big mess. The idea that these senators are shirking their responsibility to properly fund an agency that has been required by the government to provide aviation safety and suggesting that the airlines need to change the way they operate because they're incapable of doing their jobs properly is maddening and frustrating. And that's where I find this to just be so just aggravating.
Well, is there blame to go around here? I mean, is it just a perfect storm of all of the above, or is it one or the other, do you think?
Well, no question that the funding mechanism is a huge problem here. Air traffic has been growing, and TSA has not been getting the budget to be able to staff up appropriately for what they're doing. There are other issues at hand here. For example, the effort to grow PreCheck and get a lot more people to have PreCheck has not been as fast and aggressive as they'd originally hoped. Some of that is just because of changes in direction on how they're willing to sign people up for PreCheck and trying to make it a little easier for people. Those efforts have I don't know if they've disappeared, but the efforts to make it easier for people to sign up for PreCheck have stalled at the least and been, denied at the best or at the worst.
One of those lawmakers was very critical of the airlines, saying if you cut bag fees and put curb check back in place, you'd cut down on some of these lines. Do you think that's the case?
Yes. It is entirely possible that if you cut bag fees, then people would check more bags. And then that would reduce the issue at the checkpoint. However, there is a huge TSA problem. There is a huge TSA problem with scanning the bags that are being checked as well. They still have to do that as well. And I know Miami's had a lot of trouble with that. There's a backlog, and it's causing a ton of issues on that side as well. One thing that I think is funny is I was at the Phoenix Aviation Symposium this week, and Frontier CEO Barry Biffle was there. and mention that he received this letter from the senators. But what the senators apparently don't know is that Frontier charges for carry-on bags as well. And they charge less for checked baggage than they do for carry-on bags. So that is another solution. If their whole concern is that they can't properly fund the system, then maybe they should be telling the airlines to add more fees for carry-on bags to solve the problem.
And when you say they're having trouble scanning the bags or going through the bag, is it a personnel issue, a training issue, or just physically not being able to do it?
I can't say I know all the answers to that one. All I know is that there is an issue that as soon as a bag gets checked, it goes to the back and it has to go through screening. And it's not coming out fast enough in many cases to get to the airplanes on time.
The other thing, too, was they criticized the TSA director for planning on, like, a lot of these people were going to sign up for this pre-check, and that, as you said, didn't happen, and that so that he hasn't staffed up enough. Is that a big part of this, too?
That's definitely part of this, but I'm not exactly sure where the blame lies in this, because there was a plan from before where they were going to make this easier, because to sign up today, it's not as simple as it should be. And they were going to partner with some outside firms that were going to be able to handle background checks and clear people more efficiently. And then that was put on hold. And I don't know if that was due to the TSA administrator shifting position or if Congress decided to stick its nose in. But for whatever reason, that was put on hold, and that has made it harder to get people signed up. You know, pre-check, I think they say that pre-check tends to go about twice as fast as a traditional line. And so they want to get people in pre-check as much as they can. But it's not a simple sign-up process. It can be somewhat cumbersome for people. And that certainly is a barrier.
There have been some rumors recently that perhaps that's going to be given away now. It's going to go free. Do you think that will even persuade more people to sign up for it?
I mean, the cost is not really all that high. If you're buying a plane ticket, and if you think about this, today the ultra low cost carriers, the guys like Spirit, Allegiant, Frontier, they don't offer pre-check at all. Neither do any international carriers except for Air Canada and WestJet. And I believe some of that lies on our government. I know there are international carriers that are ready to do it as soon as they're allowed. So there's already a huge number of people that just have no access to that anyway. But if you're talking about people on, you know, the legacy carriers, Southwest, all those guys, it's not that expensive to do this. And if you're buying tickets, the value is pretty good if you travel even a couple of times a year.
As somebody who knows this industry really well, the cranky flyer, are you hearing from cranky flyers? I mean, we're hearing long lines, people missing flights, and it's not even the summer travel season yet.
I'm cranky about this. I was traveling this week and neither direction was pre-check open, and I have pre-check. And the process that they do for pre-check when the pre-check lane is closed is maddening because it's different at every airport. When I left Long Beach on Monday morning, they gave me a laminated card and said, give this to the screener and they'll let you through the metal detector. You can leave your shoes on, but you have to take your laptop out. When I came back out of Phoenix yesterday, I ended up being told that I had to carry my boarding pass and my ID with me to the screener. My boarding pass was on my phone. Once I showed that to the screener and scanned it, then I had to go cut back in line, put my phone onto the belt, walk back through the metal detector, and then go collect my bags at the other end. It's incredible the mess that they're creating. And there are tons of travelers that are complaining about this every day. You can go on Twitter. You can see it everywhere, Facebook.
Then there's the sort of reality check in all of this. I heard somebody today say, remember why this is all here. The security aspect of that, keeping us all safe, is it something we should complain too loudly about?
Absolutely. We should absolutely complain about this. I'm not convinced that this is keeping us safer than we were before 9/11 anyway. If you remember at 9/11... that was someone who came through security with a perfectly legal instrument in a box cutter and got on the plane and did bad things. So they changed the rule to say no box cutters, fine, and people on airplanes wouldn't allow that to happen anymore. But the problem that we face here is that there is not great efficiency and there's not great accuracy. They're not catching things. You see exposés all the time about TSA missing this or that during some test, And I think it's more theater than anything else. It's trying to give people the illusion that they're safe, when the reality is they are safe, but primarily because of intelligence efforts that are happening before you ever get to the airport.
Brett Schneider via Skype with us this morning from California. The Cranky Flyer, at Cranky Flyer on Twitter. Crankyflyer.com is the blog website. Summer travel season's not even here yet, as we've been reporting this morning on the TSA's problems. Lines out the door. Let's bring in our regular aviation and airline expert, Rick Cini, the founder and CEO of FareCompare.com, joining us this morning from Dallas. Rick, after hearing all of this this morning, what advice do you have? How bad is the problem from your vantage point?
Well, there's a couple different things. It can be up to an hour and a half or 2 hours in some cases. We're seeing some of those potential things out there. The TSA actually has an app you can load on your smartphone that looks at wait times. There's also, at certain airports, you can go into certain different gates or areas where they do have them separated out, and some of them are faster than others. They have internal train systems, for example. But essentially, you have to get there early enough, and if you're booking your flights, if you fly out of the norm, so you're not flying in the big crush in the morning between 6:30 and 9 in the morning, and in the crush in the evening between 4 and 7, that's when you're going to have your biggest lines.
The TSA again, the thing that's disingenuous about this is he announced some of these plans, but a lot of this requires Congress's approval, and we don't know that that's necessarily coming. When do you think is the earliest we could see some of the TSA security being beefed up?
I think it's going to take at least until the fall before you see the beefed up folks, where you have more folks in both types of lines. I think they're probably going to end up giving pre-check away for free. Right now it's $80 for 5 years. If they give it away for free, a lot more people will sign up. You still have to go to the airport or to one of their offices and provide your fingerprints and answer a few simple questions, which is still a bit of a hassle. That's the biggest issue, really, that caused issue. They thought 27 million people would sign up for that. Only about 9 million people have actually signed up.
And some of these lines that we're seeing, I mean, there are people missing flights because of them.
Oh, there's no doubt. I've had numerous people actually contacting me saying they missed their flight. It's crazy at the airport. So just be aware. There's nothing they can do. The airlines aren't super accommodative of this particular issue. So you just have to get to the airport early this summer, bite the bullet, make sure you have all the batteries refreshed and the kids ready to go.
When does the travel surge for the summer generally begin?
It starts right after school gets out. So most people get out either the last week in May or the first week in June. You actually see that prices for tickets because of the surge go up on June the 10th. So if you can depart before June the 10th, you can save yourself some money as well.
Well, let's talk about that. If we have some plans to head out of town, where are we finding the cheap flights?
Yeah, so I was actually looking for late June, which is a very popular time out of Chicago. It's pretty interesting. In the Northwest, Seattle, Vancouver, Portland, all under $300 round trip. That's about $50 below what it was last year. You have Los Angeles and San Diego in the low 200s round trip. That's a really good deal out of June. South Florida, under $180 round trip. That includes Miami, Fort Lauderdale. And then on the East Coast, you have all the destinations under $200 round trip, including Boston, New York, and Washington.
So some good fares to be had, and just pack your patience.
Yeah, pack your patience, and the best part of flying is seeing the airport in your rearview mirror.
Rick Cini, the founder and CEO of FareCompare.com, with us from Dallas this morning on Twitter, at Rick Cini. That's our program for today, produced by Mary Sandberg. Our engineer this morning is Bob Ferguson. Have a great day. The Steve Cochran Show is coming up next. We'll be back bright and early Monday morning.